we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, January 29th, 2016. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here today by my guest co-host, Darren Chang.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Welcome, everyone. The late historian and social activist Howard Zinn once said, "We don't have to engage in grand heroic actions to participate in the process of change. Small acts, when multiplied by millions of people, can transform the world." Our feature interview today will be with James DeAlto, founder of the Vegan Chalk Challenge, in which participants use sidewalk chalk to leave positive messages in public spaces to promote empathy for animals and a compassionate lifestyle. That's coming up in just over half an hour, so please stay tuned. Valentine's Day is coming up in just over 2 weeks, and one of the first things many people think of when they think of this holiday is chocolate. It's estimated that 58 million pounds of chocolate candy are bought each year during Valentine's Day week in the U.S. alone. What most North Americans are unaware of, unfortunately, is that the chocolate industry is rife with unethical practices that hurt both humans and non-human animals. In our first main segment coming up soon, we will discuss the animal and human rights issues surrounding chocolate production and talk about chocolate we love that is vegan and fair trade. So to start off today, Allison has some thoughts to share with us on an exciting new cookbook called Street Vegan. So Allison, this, if I understand correctly, this cookbook is written by the owners of the Cinnamon Snail food truck. Is that right?
Yeah, the owner, Adam Sobel, actually, he is the mastermind and genius behind this book, which I'm holding up here for you to see and for all of our listeners to wonder about. And it's just, it actually came out last year. It took me this long to kind of get through it and just to... it's just a wonderful book, and like I said, he's just a mastermind genius of, if anyone has heard of the Cinnamon Snail, they, have you heard of it?
I actually haven't heard of them, don't mind describing it a little bit
more. Yeah, so it's a food truck that used to be in New York City for several years, and they won the Vendy Awards in 2014, which is actually the award for the best food truck altogether, including all the omnivorous food trucks or and street food in New York City. And they were nominated actually in the several years before that as well, but they won in 2014 for like all round, like the best.
Cool.
And they are the best. I've been to New York a couple times when they were there. Unfortunately, they shut down last year, but there's always lineups for that truck, and it's by both meat eaters and none. And I would say especially probably the meat eaters. And they are just so popular. They're really well known for their very indulgent, enormous, gooey, dripping off your hand sandwiches.
That sounds amazing.
Their desserts and pastries. They make the best donuts ever and all kinds of pastries. They have just so much food available in their little truck that they used to keep in New Jersey and drive out to Manhattan every day. And in this book, Adam actually talks about, he tells these stories that he weaves throughout his book of just sort of the trials and tribulations that he used to go through in just being able to have this food truck get on the streets of New York City every day. For one thing, he was talking about how like food trucks aren't even legal in New York City. So they're always getting parking tickets and violations. But he just wanted to feed the people good food, right? Good, amazing, cruelty free food. That's also a thesis of his book, is the animal aspect. And he's just so kind and just loving towards animals. You can tell that. And he talks about animal advocacy issues throughout his book. So you're reading this book as someone who's hearing the stories that he has to tell. And then also stories from all the recipes. This book is just like, it's just filled with recipes because he's had so many different kinds of food on his truck.
So Allison, does the recipes kind of, I'm assuming it would reflect their food truck kind of food.
Yeah, so yeah. But when you think of food truck food, you're probably thinking of like simple things, right? So his sandwiches, you might think a sandwich is simple, but each sandwich might have like 50 ingredients in it. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
There's one that I was going to make this week, and he's really well known for a couple of the sandwiches. There was this Korean kimchi barbecue sandwich I remember that was nice. Always on the menu, that was very popular. I think I might have had that one, and I was gonna make the miso teriyaki seitan sandwich this week, but I didn't have a chance to. I made the seitan though, but I will be doing that next week. And yeah, so a lot of these recipes, I think they're all indicative of recipes that he's had on the food truck throughout the years, but some of them are just like he serves breakfast even, and like all kinds of different pancakes with like a million ingredients in them.
Cool.
And a lot of like superfood ingredients like the maca and lucuma, and a lot of raw stuff as well. Actually, you are able to taste test one of his recipes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was our lucky
the raw end. Raspberry chocolate torte that I had made. There were those two little pieces left over, and I thought, I've just been giving it away since last week. I actually brought that to a co-op radio meeting that I had last week for a programming committee, and there were some left over. So what did you think of it?
Oh, it was delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I tried it and immediately I just felt like that's, you know, the restaurant material. Like
absolutely.
You could definitely, the quality, the texture, you could sell that for good price.
Yeah. Actually, I had sent a picture of it, a nice one. The one that you had was kind of like all like tumbled around in my bag on the way here this morning. It was like, you know, decorated with a raspberry coulis and cacao nibs with raspberries on top. And it looked way better before when I had it at home. But I sent a picture of a nice one to my sister, and she's like, that looks like restaurant food. So I'm like, what does that mean? I'm like, oh, that's a compliment. I had made a blueberry cheesecake last week, actually, and I sent her a picture of it too, and she said the same thing. Like, it looked like their food is just really pretty. He's really into presentation, and I appreciate that. He's just like very, very much into like the whole food aspect. So if you're wondering who this book would be good for, I would say definitely not a beginner, because a beginner is probably going to be very intimidated by like the millions of ingredients that are in most of these recipes, not all. There's a recipe for kabocha squash, actually, that I'm going to be making. I bought two squashes last week, and it's very simple. You just like make a mix and roast it in the
just
oven.
Make sure you invite me over for dinner.
Yeah, really. Oh, yeah. I was going to invite my friend over for dinner last night to try a bunch of these dishes, but he wasn't able to, so I didn't make all of them yet. Oh, there was this. I brought, you two weren't here, but I brought this. It's called live pumpkinish pie. Live because it's raw. Pumpkinish because it tastes like pumpkin pie, but there was actually no pumpkin in it.
Oh.
And yeah, that was pretty cool. So I gave it to Caroline here and who else? Someone else who was hosting a couple weeks ago. They loved it. It tastes like a cheesecake, actually. It was just delicious. His desserts are great. Yeah, I've got to make more of the non-desserty stuff. But I also have to say is I need to make, it is my goal, because they're really well known for their donuts. I've got to try the donuts. I'm not a deep fryer kind of person, so I do not make donuts. I'm scared at what might happen to my weight if I make donuts, because each recipe is for like 16 donuts or 30 donuts or something like that. And they only last for a day, right? You have to give them away right away.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
But I really, really want to make the cinnamon apple fritters next week.
Oh,
so
wow.
We'll see if that happens. But yeah, like I said, there's a lot of unusual ingredients that he uses, and a lot of ingredients. He's really into umeboshi plum vinegar, wasabi, kimchi, as I mentioned, Korean ground chilies, like really into the Korean type of flavor. I also made the red wine minestrone soup and jalapeno corn chowder, as he calls it, from this book. The minestrone soup was to die for. It was just like absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you have a favorite recipe, but they all sound so good.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, I don't yet, because I have like, I want to try more, but I'm also going to be moving on to my next book to review, which is going to be totally the opposite. It's going to be cleansing myself from the donuts that I'm going to make next week. But yeah, like I said, like this is definitely a book for a foodie. someone who likes reading ingredients like I do and really gets off on reading all these really crazy ingredients and like 50 ingredients per recipe and then making them, it's an adventure. So good news is that the Cinnamon Snail has reopened as an actual brick and mortar restaurant in Penn Station in New York City. So you can go there and try out their food and definitely check out the book, Street Vegan.
Sweet. Awesome. Thank you, Allison.
Yeah, no problem.
So we have some events coming up this weekend. Tonight, Friday, January 29th at 8 p.m., there's a documentary screening of Food Chains at Eternal Abundance, which is at 1025 Commercial Drive. The organizers say, come join us at Eternal Abundance for a documentary film on human slavery in the food industry. Attendance is by donation for $5, which includes tea and a cookie. In this expose, an intrepid group of Florida farm workers battle to defeat the $4 trillion global supermarket industry through their ingenious Fair Food Program, which partners with growers and retailers to improve working conditions for farm laborers in the United States. So again, that's tonight at 8 p.m. at Eternal Abundance. Then on Sunday, January 31st at 10 a.m., there's the Liberation BC January Pig Slaughterhouse Vigil at the Britco Pork Processing Plant in Langley. And they say, please come to stand in unity to bear witness to the suffering behind the walls of Britco pork processors. Blocking of trucks may occur. Discussion will take place beforehand to ensure consent of all participants. There's a strip of sidewalk on either side of the entrance. Rides will be organized. See their Facebook event page for more details. Again, that's Liberation BC, January Pig Slaughterhouse Vigil on Sunday at 10 a.m.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for those events. I mean, both of those are so important. The Food Chains one, I mean, so often vegans don't really get exposed to the issues around farm workers and, you know, outside of animal advocacy. Right. And I think that's very important. It's actually very relevant to the topic that we're going to be discussing next about, you know, the chocolate industry and whatnot.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I'm really excited for the pig vigil too. It's very much inspired by Toronto Pig Save. And if anybody has seen their videos on Facebook and on YouTube, you know, it's like a really emotional and powerful experience to witness what the animals are going through as they were sent on their way to slaughter. So yeah, definitely come out to those events. And lastly, on this is also on Sunday, January 31st, from 11:20 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., there will be another protest outside the Greater Vancouver Zoo in Alder Grove. The address is 504A 264th Street in Alder Grove and Langley. So the organizers say, we're back at the Greater Vancouver Zoo to tell them loud and clear yet again that we will not tolerate their keeping of animals in captivity for public entertainment and amusement. We stand in solidarity with those individuals living trapped behind fences and will speak out against their cruel treatment until this zoo closes its gates for good. And those are all your events for this weekend.
Awesome.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food. Sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food. Hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories.
So for this next segment, we're going to have a discussion about the chocolate industry and the dairy industry in relation to an upcoming holiday, which is Valentine's Day. And of course, as we all know, around Valentine's Day, chocolates are extremely popular, and these products are, you know, mass produced. I guess, you know, a lot of people love milk chocolates more mm-hmm. than dark chocolates.
Yeah.
So we're just gonna talk a little bit about, you know, what is actually involved in making these products. And for me, this is always kind of a tough part because I love chocolates.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. So, you know, after finding out that a lot of chocolates are actually, you know, produced in really unethical ways through forced child labor, for example, in Western Africa and whatnot. It became sort of an important thing as an ethical vegan to go out there and actually find which chocolates are, you know, fair trade and ethically produced. I think we're really lucky to actually have an organization out there that has been providing a lot of this really useful information. They've done their research, and that organization is the Food Empowerment Project, and they're a nonprofit based in the United States, founded by an activist named Lauren Ornelas. And their goal is to really bring attention and also, you know, drawing connections between different forms of exploitation and oppression and how they sort of connect to one another. And in this case, they've really focused on the issue of food justice and looking at how, you know, the production of food causes suffering to both human and non-human animals. So, you know, cows in the dairy industry and the workers in, you know, the... You
and we've had Lauren on the show before, too, yes. If people want to check out her interview. I think we've maybe done two interviews with her. Go to animalvoices.org and look up Food Empowerment Project.
Cool. And on their website, there's a great list of ethical chocolates you can source. So, Elise, I'm not sure if you have any ethical chocolates that you would recommend.
I find the list on the Food Empowerment Project's website super helpful. They actually even have a free app for your smartphone that can tell you whether the chocolate you're looking at was ethically produced or not. They find this out by basically contacting companies and asking where they source their cocoa from and that sort of thing. And they can kind of get an idea of whether it's produced using slave labor or not that way. But for me, often when I buy chocolate or a chocolate, you know, cocoa products, cocoa powder, chocolate chips, that kind of thing. Camino is a great brand. I know that they're on the Food Empowerment Project list and they're ethically sourced, and that's something they advertise pretty heavily. What else? Theo Chocolate is pretty great. They even have fair trade peanut butter cups, you know, kind of like the classic Reese's peanut butter cups, except vegan and fair trade, the dark chocolate ones. So,
what about you, Allison? Do you have any recommendations?
Oh, you know, I wasn't really prepared, but I like those two as well. Yeah. Is Theo the same as Theobroma? Like, are they
no,
the same?
No, I think they're two different brands.
I think, I think the Theobroma, they're not fully vegan, but they've got some vegan options there. The one chocolate bar that I really like, I hope it's ethical and fair trade. Like, I only look for, I'm kind of like, I like to call myself a chocolate connoisseur, but not really. I don't really, you know, I just kind of shop in the normal stores, but the regular natural food stores and even like London Drugs, I went there the other day and I just really wanted some chocolate and they had my favorite chocolate there. Sassy Chocolate, it's called. That's the that's the name of it. And I can't remember the brand, but it's this one kind of this whole brand that is vegan because it's made out of coconut milk. So for those of you who really yearn for your milk chocolate, and I've really have developed a taste for dark chocolate since going vegan. Like I just, you know, I'm not really into the I used to only eat milk dairy chocolate before, right? Not having a taste for dark chocolate because you kind of really need to change your taste buds, I think, to kind of like that kind of like darker, bitter taste. But the Sassy is made out of coconut milk. Cool. So, and it's very yummy. So I hope it's ethical and fair trade.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it is.
I think I know the brand you're talking about. The name is escaping me,
I'll look it up.
It is. I was actually just at Parthenon Market the other day in Kitsilano, and I noticed that they sell Organic Fair chocolate. That's actually the name of the brand, Organic Fair. And those, you know, as the name suggests, are fair trade. And they're wonderful. They have all these wonderful flavors. And yeah, for those who like milk chocolate, I noticed that they have a vegan milk chocolate that's made with coconut milk, which seems pretty interesting. So.
That sounds great.
Yeah, the brand name is Zazubean.
Right. Yeah, as far as I know, those ones are fair trade as well.
Yeah, looking like they are from their website. So, and it's a bright pink package. You can find them at Choices. And like I said, I'm London Drugs. They're out there in the stores. So very yummy.
Cool.
Personally, I do support local businesses. There's
Zimt.
Yes, Zimt is based out of Vancouver and is definitely on Food Empowerment Project's list of chocolates that they're comfortable recommending, which is basically, you know, the highest quality that they can assure consumers. I also enjoy this brand called Go Max Go, and they make delicious chocolate bars.
Are they fair trade and ethical and all that too? Because they make kind of like the traditional chocolate bars that you would taste, like really, like what are some of their flavors?
Like vegan Mars bars.
Exactly.
Yeah, kind of
Snickers.
I love those things.
But the vegan versions,
they're yummy. Cool. Well, yeah. So it's great to talk about ethical chocolates that we love. But can you tell us more about why it's so important to look for fair trade chocolates? Like, what are some of the issues surrounding cocoa production?
Yeah, I mean, just child labor and slavery itself is, you know, a huge concern. And, you know, like research have been done and people have looked into this. Often these cases of exploitation and abuse would involve, you know, acts of physical violence. And we're talking about children who are actually, you know, being whipped for working too slowly. And, you know, a lot of times these kids would be trying to escape and they would get caught. And it's just, you know, these industries are not very transparent at all about where the chocolates are being sourced from. And it's really important for us as consumers to take the responsibility to find out these things and resist supporting that industry in any way we can.
Yeah, that's horrifying. And as if I understand correctly, it's a lot of these, I mean, I'm sure this is an issue to an extent almost everywhere, or it can be, but I understand that the problem is most concentrated, the problem of slavery and child slavery is most concentrated in Ghana and Ivory Coast. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
So, yeah, if cocoa is sourced from there, that's a red flag.
Yeah, and that's really useful information to know that sometimes if you even just look at the, you know, source of the chocolate, you can kind of have a pretty good idea of, you know, whether you should support that or not.
Right.
And, you know, dairy is really
that's something we should talk about. We are a show dedicated to animal rights.
Yes. I mean, a lot of the chocolates are milk chocolates, and those seems to be the most popular. And we all know that dairy industry is really awful to animals. I recently actually watched a video done by this vegan musician artist, Erin Janis. She made a 5-minute clip, basically within 5 minutes talked about all the things that are horrific and wrong with the dairy industry.
I've seen that, and it's actually a really
powerful video. It has a lot of crude humor, but I think sometimes it takes that to get the message across. And, you know, stuff that we're, most of us are pretty familiar with, you know, non-consensual forced insemination of cows, taking away their babies, even though we know that mother cows and their babies have strong emotional bonds, even, you know, right after they're born. And, you know, these cows are just repeatedly put into labor to give birth, to produce milk, and their lifespans are just drastically decreased to their in comparison to their natural lifespan. So
can I ask your opinion on something, Darren and Elise? There's this very popular blog post going around right now about veganism, and one of the I put a comment on it, so the comments are coming back to me. One of the comments from someone, I would say, who really doesn't really know what they're talking about, but it really irks me when people put a comment on and then I think everyone's going to believe that.
Right.
There's no one's responding to it to give, you know, a rational response, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
So someone put, you know, dairy cows are raped because they're artificially inseminated. And someone said, well, I don't think it's rape because they would want to do it anyways. What do you think?
I don't think cows want to be artificially inseminated. I don't know why someone would say that. It seems like a fairly violent process. I mean, yeah,
it just seemed like, so it was such a crude comment, and to the lowest denominator, it's like when people just don't like see all the different aspects about it and they don't know.
Yeah.
Because what they'd want to do it anyways, because we're all reproductive beings, but not in that way.
Right.
No,
exactly.
Definitely not. And, you know, it's definitely not natural. I mean, the fact that they live so much shorter than how they would have
lived
naturally.
That's right. Good point. Right? There's a lot of other points around it as well.
Yeah. Definitely. And they certainly wouldn't, you know, like Darren said, mother cows and their calves bond immediately as soon as the calf is born, just like, exactly. You know, human mothers, just like mothers of any species. And they certainly don't want to be separated. There's, you know, empirical evidence that this causes them great distress to be separated. So
for sure.
Yeah, that seems like a silly comment.
So yeah, it's really encouraging to see that, you know, chocolate products are also moving away from using cow's milk and actually shifting towards a wide variety of different milks.
Yeah, I've seen rice milk, chocolate, right? And that kind of thing. Yeah,
and Allison mentioned coconut milk and chocolate, which just sounds amazing to me.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, and I think that's a great thing. I think sometimes people are concerned, you know, because like you said, milk chocolate is very popular. A lot of people love it. And I think people think, oh, if I go vegan, I can't eat chocolate that I like anymore. But you can be vegan and still eat milk chocolate. Just
but you know what?
Non-dairy milk.
The whole thing about going vegan is, oh, I won't be able to eat all these foods that I like anymore. But not only are there a lot of alternatives, like we're talking about the chocolates, right? But it just opens you up to so many more foods, and your taste buds change, and you develop tastes for different kinds of foods in a way larger variety as well. So, like if you cut out the meat, then there's just so much out there that's you're not being blinded by just like, I've got to have meat for every meal.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yes, definitely. So I think, you know, lastly, I just kind of want to summarize by saying that Valentine's Day, you know, it's all about love. And I think it would be really wonderful if people could extend that sense of and feeling of love and compassion, you know, beyond just the people who were in romantic relationships with, but, you know, just be more compassionate in general and care about the people out there who are, and the animals out there who are just being exploited and suffering, so that, you know, we can enjoy chocolates and buy presents for, you know, loved ones and whatnot. And this is one thing I think important to mention. Like Elise said earlier, a lot of times you can just kind of tell by where the chocolates are coming from that, you know, there's probably something sketchy about it. So Food Empowerment Project says that, you know, a significant amount of cocoa is also grown in Latin America, and this is where a majority of the organic cocoa originates. At this time, neither slavery nor child labor have been documented on these cocoa farms. So, you know, if you buy chocolates that are labeled, you know, from Latin America and in those areas, especially once they're organic and fair trade, then, you know, it's would probably be better.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a fairly simple solution. I think there's something to be said, too, for just, you know, just aiming to reduce overall consumption. I think often stuff like this becomes a problem because the demand is so high and growers and producers are trying desperately to keep up with the demand. Often most of the demand is coming from the West. It's coming from wealthy nations, right? We're the ones like voraciously buying and eating all this chocolate.
Yay, capitalism.
So, yeah, really.
And consumerism.
Exactly. So I think, you know, I've tried to, like, I love chocolate, and I've always loved chocolate, especially dark chocolate. And but I've tried to sort of shift my thinking around it. Like, okay, maybe I don't need to eat chocolate every single day. I don't need to buy it all the time. It's actually really cool if I just sort of save it as a treat. You know, I just have it on special occasions. And
dark chocolate's pretty rich too. So, you know, I buy the bars that we've been talking about, and it's easy just to take off a few squares and eat those and savor them.
Right.
Unless you're eating the Sassy, then I do eat it all at once.
Yeah.
Because it's got the coconut milk in it, and it allowed you to do that. But,
exactly.
But, and then, yeah, but otherwise, I usually keep, like, I buy them when they're on sale and when I'm going to the States, so I always have a big supply. And then if I'm like, I want some chocolate, I'll just go in and I've got this chocolate, I think it's chocolate raspberry, dark chocolate raspberry bar. It's on my desk. It's been there for a couple of weeks now because I had a couple little pieces a few weeks ago, and it's still there. It'll be there when I kind of get the feel again for like a nice dark chocolatey taste.
That is some willpower, Allison. You can have it sitting right in front of you, and it'll eat a few squares.
Yeah,
it's very impressive.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Yeah.
And I have to hide mine.
Of course, I mean, like, chocolates and flowers, it's not like, that's not what Valentine's Day is all about, right? Like, we can get creative, we can do different things.
It's about cupcakes.
Exactly.
Yeah, cupcakes, exactly. For sure.
Well, I always make cupcakes for Valentine's Day.
Can just get creative and find alternative presents and food to make and gifts and whatnot. So,
exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you would like more information on slavery in the chocolate industry or chocolates that are ethically sourced, check out the Food Empowerment Project's website. I believe that's foodispower.org.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, they have lots and lots of information on all these issues. And again, you can download their smartphone app as well that helps you find ethical chocolate.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, on ceded Coast Salish territories.
All right, and now for the news. National Hockey League defenseman Clayton Stoner has pleaded guilty to hunting without a license in connection with the grizzly bear hunt on British Columbia's Central Coast. Stoner, age 30, who plays for the Anaheim Ducks, appeared in an Abbotsford, BC court on Wednesday to face one charge under the Provincial Wildlife Act involving the hunt in BC's Great Bear Rainforest in May 2013. Stoner's kill sparked angry debate in September 2013 when photos were published in a Vancouver newspaper showing him holding up a grizzly's severed head. A First Nations group also screened a documentary in Vancouver featuring the pictures, which were taken by a Heiltsuk Nation field technician who confronted Stoner after the kill. Jess Hoostie, a tribal counselor with the First Nation based in Bella Bella, has said Stoner boasted about the animal he had shot and showed off the paws and head. But Stoner claimed at the time to have the necessary permits and licenses. He also released a public statement saying he grew up hunting and fishing in BC and would continue those activities. The grizzly shot by Stoner, whom local residents had named Cheeky, was killed in the Great Bear Rainforest. Brian Falconer, who's with the Raincoast Conservation Fund, read a victim impact statement in court. He said Cheeky was an asset to his group's work. Falconer said he was very comfortable being viewed by humans. This is referring to Cheeky the bear. His untimely death due to Mr. Stoner's unlawful actions has caused us significant harm, including financial loss, and has been a significant disappointment to our guides and clients, end quote. Falconer said the animal's remains should be returned. Stoner's lawyer, Marvin Stern, told Judge Brent Hoy that his client wasn't opposed to turning over the bear's skull and hide. An examination of the bear's tooth showed that the animal was 18 years old, and the remains are being held by the province.
Yeah, that is very tragic. And last I heard, I think Clayton Stoner got fined $10,000, and I think that's the extent of his punishment that he received. Wow. Which for a professional hockey player, that's basically a slap on the wrist.
Yeah,
which is very unfortunate. It really reflects strongly on where our legal system, both our legal system and our government's priorities are with regards to protecting wildlife in British Columbia. So in response to this, Bears Forever, which is a project of the Coastal First Nations and the Central Coast First Nations Bear Working Group, they have released a statement in response to the news regarding Clayton Stoner's charge. And they said, so, you know, as everyone celebrates Clayton Stoner being sentenced today, here are some things to bear in mind. First, trophy hunting is not illegal under settler law. Stoner has simply been found guilty of hunting with the wrong kind of license. We need to make this illegal under settler law so the activity stops completely. Secondly, Stoner is also guilty of contravening the indigenous ban on trophy hunting under indigenous law, and the settler courts have no jurisdiction over that. Third, no one should have caught Stoner in the first place if First Nations hadn't. No one would have caught Stoner in the first place if First Nations hadn't been investing their money and energy in monitoring hunt activity. The province has no capacity to effectively regulate or monitor the hunt. That burden falls to us. And lastly, justice for Cheeky, the bear shot by Stoner, is important. But what we're fighting for with the Bears Forever campaign is justice for all bears. That won't happen until the province regulates an end to the hunt, and we won't stop our work until they do. And I think that's very important to mention because the indigenous sovereignty and resistance in protecting the Great Bear Rainforest is such an important and integral part of this story. And a lot of times that's left out in mainstream media, and people don't realize that, you know, a lot of bears are still alive today because of the hard work that the First Nations activists have been putting into. Yep.
Yeah, so, for sure. For
support Bears Forever. Visit bearsforever.ca and support their cause because they're doing on the ground work protecting these bears.
Yeah, that's very important for sure. All right, so I think we have to move on now. For our feature interview today, we're pleased to welcome James DeAlto. James is a vegan activist and videographer from Raleigh, North Carolina, and the founder of the Vegan Chalk Challenge. Hello, James, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hey there, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. So first of all, can you give us a summary of what the Vegan Chalk Challenge is and what it involves?
Sure. The Vegan Chalk Challenge was just an idea that I came up with after I just was faced with this nagging question of what more could I be doing for animals? And, you know, I wasn't doing a whole lot. I leafleted a few times. I helped out a little bit at my local sanctuaries. But I kept thinking, what more can I do just in my everyday life? So I walked my dogs a lot on a paved greenway, and I thought, well, why don't I just get some chalk and maybe leave some vegan messages here? So I did that, and it felt good, and I got some feedback from people who had seen my messages, and I started posting my pictures online, and other vegans got real excited about it. So I said, well, people seem really excited about this, so maybe I'll create an event, and we'll call it the Vegan Chalk Challenge, and we'll see if we can get other people doing this. So I did that, and to my great surprise, a whole bunch of people signed up from all over the world and started writing really pretty, colorful vegan chalk messages all over the place. So
cool.
It was exciting. Yeah.
So how do people sign up to be involved in the Vegan Chalk Challenge?
If you want to officially sign up, you can. There's an event page on Facebook, but there's really nothing too official about it. So it's just an event page where you can, like any other, you can invite friends and share your pictures there. It's just very, very simple.
Awesome. So you mentioned on your Facebook page that you've been vegan for 5 years. Is that right?
Yep.
And have you been involved in other forms of animal advocacy before, or was the Chalk Challenge kind of your first foray into activism?
No, I've done some other things. Not one particular thing. Just a variety. I've leafleted for vegan outreach a few times. I go to tabling events, help out the local sanctuaries. I'm a videographer, so I help out a little bit with, I made a promotional video for one of the local sanctuaries. I do a lot of online activism too, I guess. This was, the chalking thing was just something I figured, I could just get this into my daily routine. Just a variety of things, I suppose. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. And you mentioned that you've done a similar challenge in the past, right? And on your Facebook page, it said that over 1,200 people signed up from all over the world. So when did the most recent challenge begin, and how many people have signed up so far?
The first one wasn't really meant to end, quite honestly. It was because on Facebook, I created the event, and the date came, and then I had been pushing the date out further and further, but the date came and went, so then I wasn't able to keep pushing the date out, so I had to create a new event. And as it turned out, it was a good time to do it at the very beginning of the year. So I just called it 2016 Vegan Chalk Challenge. So far we've had, I think, like over 800 people have signed up so far. So, it's not just a one-time event. It's just, I don't know, I thought about changing the name to maybe just Vegan Chalking Everywhere. I guess I'm got this utopian idea that we can just, start leaving vegan chalk messages everywhere, and we'll get really, really excited, and we'll just chalk our way to animal liberation.
Cool. Yeah.
I don't know.
So James, I'm on the Facebook event page, and I see that you've often been posting like updates and photos of different chalkings being sent to you from different parts of the world. And I was wondering if you have come across any that you have found, you know, really impressive, or is some really memorable ones. Like for me, I've seen chalk art being done in Toronto, where activists were outside slaughterhouses and they chalk these beautiful pictures of images of animals like chickens and baby calves with like a message. So have you come across any really impressive or memorable ones?
You know, yeah, those came to my attention after I started this chalk challenge. Anita Crunch, I'm afraid I'm not saying that right.
Yeah, Anita Crunch.
Yeah, she brought to my attention a couple of people have been doing it up there with Toronto Pig Save. Yeah, those are by far, I forget her last name, it's Joe. Who does the really elaborate, really beautiful, detailed drawings of some chickens. I know she did. She's a professional artist. So those were by far the most impressive. Fortunately, not at all inspired by me. But I have seen, yeah, some people really have taken it to a whole new level. Somebody just recently, I think it was in London, they made a huge, Go Vegan 2016 message in some big public square. And so that was one that comes to mind. But if you scroll through there, you know, you'll see there are some very artistic people who have joined in. And so, yeah, when I see something that comes in where I can tell people really took quite a bit of time to do it, I'm always... it's always a great feeling.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, and on your Facebook page, you encourage participants to keep their chalk messages positive and uplifting and to avoid negative or confrontational statements. Can you elaborate on this?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I mean, I think a lot about rhetoric that we use in our movement, and that's this could be a big discussion in itself. I personally... find that I'm a lot more successful when I frame vegan messages in terms of things that people already agree with, compassion, kindness, love, peace, etc., rather than, you know, some of the old kind of stereotypical approaches, you know, murder, meat is murder, slavery, rape, Holocaust, all that stuff. I think that those really, create a lot of defensiveness with people. So, yeah, the feedback that I've gotten from, I tend to do a lot of my messages in my neighborhood. I'll see the same people, on a regular basis while I'm out walking my dogs, and they know it's me now leaving the messages. And they're not vegans, but they'll tell me, "Hey, I saw your message. Love what you're doing. I love what you're doing." And,
cool.
I just don't imagine I would get the same kind of reaction if I was just going, you know, around writing meat is murder and dairy is rape everywhere. So I think that's part of it. Yeah.
And going on the, talking about positivity, one thing that I find so great about chalking is that it's such an accessible thing to do. I mean, people of all different ages can participate. Have you seen any children and families sort of taking part in this vegan chalking challenge?
Yeah, definitely. And that's one thing that's exciting for me, too, because, you know, yeah, it's definitely a family oriented event, community event where you can have everybody come out. And so, yeah, you know, I've seen pictures where the kids will, you know, really get into it. And yeah, that's one aspect of it that I think is pretty unique. You know, when I'm out there doing them myself, I have kids, you know, I hear them coming up along the path and say, "Oh, what are you fighting?" So, you know, they get excited naturally. And then some, you know, I've had kids like come along and they just want to, you know, kind of, stomp on top of it, like hopscotch, you know, and their parents will be like, "Oh no, don't do that." I say, "No, it's going to get run over a million times." But, But yeah, it's, you know, I think that's one thing that's unique about it. It's very approachable for pretty much anybody, and it takes, you know, it really doesn't take much time to do. You can, you know, go out and do it by yourself, do it with a group. But yeah, it's just kind of a fun, creative way to be active.
That's awesome.
So I don't know if you're aware, but I came across this really interesting story that happened around last summer, I believe. It was a campaign in the U.S. called No New Animal Lab. And what happened was that some of the activists involved in the campaign were actually charged with, mischief for chalking on sidewalks. But I think luckily they had all the charges dropped because it was found that it was within their constitutional right to actually chalk on public property. But have you experienced any sort of, concerns along those lines where people might say, like, you know, this is graffiti, this is mischief, and, you know, anything like that?
No, not personally, and I've not heard of anybody else who's been doing this. Mm-hmm. Have any trouble either, but that, you know, that's a question that comes up sometimes. I mean, locally, I called my city and I asked them if it was okay for me to do this. They said, yeah, it's fine, as long as it washes away and it's not obscene.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, that's another reason why I think just keeping the messages centered around, you know, very positive, peaceful rhetoric is important. I'm not too worried about it right now. I know that in some places it is illegal. So, you know, if anybody is, you know, thinking about doing it in their own area and they're worried about something like this, you know, getting into trouble, I would say just call your city. But, you know, my feeling is that this is, you know, I believe that it is a First Amendment issue. You know, and I think that, you know, if all of a sudden you started telling people that, you know, their kids can't write on sidewalks and chalk anymore, that's gonna, you know, I mean, that could be, if this story keeps developing, if more people keep doing this, and if, you know, I mean, I don't intend to stop. I plan to keep going out and doing this all over the place in Raleigh, and I've wondered if maybe at some point, you know, somebody will get upset enough to report me. And I, you know, quite honestly, I think, you know, I would probably keep doing it, even if they told me not to, because I think that it's going to, you know, raise this bigger question of, you know, what we're allowed to write in public spaces. And my feeling is that, you know, one thing that I really like about this, too, is that I'm able to sort of reclaim a piece of, you know, public space,
yeah.
You know, that is just completely, you know, being overrun by corporate interests right now. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think that, yeah, it would be an interesting battle if
for sure.
Really,
I mean, they're allowed to advertise all over the place, so
exactly.
You know, what
yeah.
about us?
I think it was Banksy who made a statement about that, taking the public space back from corporations and advertisers. Mm-hmm.
I think this is a big part of it too, because and one thing that somebody else brought to my attention recently was this overpass light brigade. Have you guys seen that?
Yes, yeah. I've seen this. They use fancy sort of lighting effects to write messages, right? So essentially the lights become words and letters. Yeah, that's really cool, I think, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, exactly. It's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's the same idea. It's just basically reclaiming, you know, public space, you know, creating your own billboard, you know. And they use these, panels with just a bunch of lights. Each person holds a letter, and they spell out whatever they want to spell out, and they just stand on an overpass. And I think that's really exciting. It's actually inspired me to think about doing that same mm-hmm. thing with a vegan message here in Raleigh.
Cool.
Yeah.
James, I have a question for you. I'm just on the Facebook event right now. You've got a lot of info on there, by the way, on just how to get started with this. And you have some suggestions of some creative messages that one could write, say, if you're next to a big tree or on a walking path or over a bridge. I was wondering if maybe you could share those suggestions of messages with us.
Sure. These types of messages, I think, are more memorable because I try to just tie the message into the surroundings. So, for example, If there's like a little bridge and a walking path, oftentimes I'll write, help build a bridge to a kinder world, choose vegan. And people seem to kind of get, they're tickled by that. Or if there's a big rock, I've written a message like, let boundless compassion rock your world.
Cute.
You know, so you can do anything. And I think that's part of what makes it memorable, too. That, you know, just you can be as creative as you want. And I think that's why people stop to look, is because they say, oh, it's sort of like street art almost. I mean, so, yeah, people just like that creative aspect of it.
Can you share any notable experiences you've had with people passing by who see you chalking in a public place? Anything that especially stands out in your memory?
Yeah, let's see. I guess one of the first times I was doing it, I had a gal, she came by with her boyfriend, and she had seen my shirt. I was wearing a vegan t-shirt, and she says, oh, I love your shirt. And then she looked down, and she read the message, and she says, oh, and I love your message, too. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, great. And she went on her way, and then, you know, a few days later, somebody came by, and she says, oh, hey, yeah, I really love your message. I'm mostly vegan, and, yeah, I'm thinking, you know, I should keep doing this. And I said, oh, great, you know, and it was an opportunity for me to invite her to come out to some of our community events. So, and then I have a vegan therapist, actually, who she runs along the same trail that I do a lot of my chalkings. And one of the first times she saw it, you know, she came to me and she said, hey, I saw this vegan message. You know, was that you who did that? I said, yeah. She said, oh, I figured. She says, yeah, when I saw it, I got so excited, I threw my arms in the air, and I said, yes!
That's great.
And so I think, you know, I mean, it serves a lot of different purposes that I really hadn't considered too much before I started doing this. And one is that I think just, you know, for people who might be considering veganism, I think it lets them know that there are other people out there who are really passionate about this, and it, you know, reinforces that they probably should keep moving in that direction. I think, you know, I've had somebody else, you know, come up to me and she said, oh, yeah, you know, I used to be a vegan and now I feel guilty. And yeah, I know. And it was because, you know, I went back because of social pressures. And I said, well, you know, and so, you know, we chatted a little bit and it's just opened up a lot of conversations. I had another woman come up to me and she says, oh, I really love your message. And she says, yeah, I'm into health, you know, and stuff. So anything vegan, I think, is great. So we talked about the health aspect. I've only had one, you know, kind of negative response, really. And that was from, you know, this woman. She was sort of curmudgeonly. And she said, she's walking along with her husband. She says, we really don't like what you're doing. I said, oh, I'm sorry. I said, well, there's a lot of other people who do. And she said, yeah, well, we eat meat. And and her husband, he goes, yeah, I like mine fresh.
Wow.
Okay. I said, well, hey, look, if you're so passionate about it, I said, there's plenty of other space on this pavement here. You can grab yourself a box of chalk, whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, but overwhelmingly, the reactions are really positive. And one that actually does stand out to me, probably most prominently, is that my next door neighbor, he's a Trump supporter and a rabid meat eater. And he walks his dog in the same path that I leave all my messages. And he says, hey, when are you going to write your next message? Yeah, I love that Tolstoy quote.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, this must be, you know, it's just approachable for people. I guess even if they don't agree, they kind of just get a kick out of seeing something very unexpected along their walks. I think it's just, it validates, it offers a sense of validation, I think, for our community. And when people see the messages, the pictures that I post online, they get very excited. So I think that's one aspect of it that I really love.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today, James. It's been really great talking to you.
You too. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
For sure. If you'd like to learn more about the Vegan Chalk Challenge or sign up to participate, check out their Facebook page at facebook.com/veganchalkchallenge.
That was a great interview. You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our show next week. It's going to be next Friday, February the 5th. We have two interviews for you. We'll be having Adam Wilson, Director of Investigations of the organization Last Chance for Animals, on the show to speak about the recent investigation of marine land here in Ontario, and Bill S-203 that was just presented to the Senate to end whales in captivity in Canada. We'll also be having someone from the Wildlife Defense League, which is a local organization here in BC, to speak about the wolf cull. They'll be giving us an update on that and their current work that they are doing out in the field right now. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Please go to animalvoices.org, where you can stream shows from our archive or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links, subscribe to us via iTunes, and learn about our upcoming events. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We also do need volunteers here at Animal Voices. We are all volunteer run. We specifically need people to host and produce shows. So if you are interested and have an aptitude for, say, speaking on the air and for animal rights issues, please send me an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We are closing the show now with a song by Propagandhi. They're a local Canadian band called, and the song is called "Apparently I'm a PC Fascist Because I Care About Both Human and Non-Human Animals." Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Like big final refugee, character assassination. Ignore the issues and other relation between consumption and brutality. And you can roll your eyes and marginalize me and play on insecurities, and you can feign ignorance, but you're not stupid, you're just selfish. Slaves and impulse, and I kind of thought we all shared common threats, in that we gravitated here to challenge the vision we've been fed by cultures that treat creatures like machines. And if you buy that shit, then how long till it's me who serves as your commodity through institutionalized violence and oppression of workers, women raped by sexism, and do you still insist on feigning indignance to reason collective self-interest? I'll call you on your shit, please call me on mine. Yeah, then we can grow together, make this shit more planet better. Consider someone else.